Those of you that were not here on what night was it? Friday night, you missed an opportunity to worship the Lord. A great time of prayer, I believe, was experienced by all of those who participated, those who came and allowed the Lord speak to them. And I want to thank you, Daniel and Kristen, and all the others that were involved in making that happen. Yeah. Again, I would say to you, when you have opportunity to pray like that, you are the one that misses out on that if you cannot come. Also, I'd like to remind you about our next Sunday night, our community blitz. I pray that you're a participant in that. If you haven't signed up and don't get a chance to sign up, you can come, but make sure you're here in time to get assigned a place to go. 3 o'clock here, meeting in the Family Life Center. Psalm 74, read verses 1 through 23. Sermon title is, Where Do You Turn? Where Do You Turn? Again, Psalm 74, 1 through 23. O God, why hast thou cast us off forever? Why doth thine anger smoke against the sheep of thy pasture? Remember thy congregation which thou hast purchased of old, the rod of thine inheritance which thou hast redeemed, this Mount Zion wherein thou hast dwelt. Lift up thy feet into the perpetual desolations, even all that the enemy hath done wickedly in the sanctuary. Thine enemies roar in the midst of thy congregations. They set up their incense for signs. By the way, one version talked about them putting graffiti on the wall, and when it talks about incense for signs, and whether he got that entirely correctly, I'm not for sure, but it was an interesting thought how God's enemies sometimes wants to write bad things about God even within the house of God. You should keep that in mind, by the way, when you read the books that you read and go to the movies you go to and you see anti-Christian slogans and outlooks presented. All they're trying to do is write within the house of God. If you're a Christian, part of the house of God, all they're trying to do is write within your heart falsehoods. I keep that in mind. It's something I thought was neat. And so I give that to you. You don't have to pay anything extra. A man was famous according as he had lifted up axes upon the thick trees. Now they break down the carved work thereof at once with axes and hammers. They have cast fire into thy sanctuary. They have defiled by casting down the dwelling place of thy name to the ground. They said in their hearts, let us destroy them together. They have burned up the synagogues of God in the land. We see not our signs. And by the way, again, I'm just trying to give you a few little things, tidbits, kind of. I run across things that I just think they're interesting to me, and so I think you should be interested in it too. So whether you are or not, the term synagogue there was not the same idea of the synagogue of the New Testament. They were not at the place in their history where they actually had synagogues at that time. But what he's talking about really is just the house of God, the place where God was, where the people of God met. It says, we see not our signs. There's no more any prophet, neither is there among us any that knoweth how long. O God, how long shall the adversary reproach? Shall the enemy blaspheme thy name forever? Why withdrawest thou thy hand, even thy right hand, pluck it out of thy bosom? For God is my king of old, working salvation in the midst of the earth. Thou didst divide the sea by thy strength. Thou breakest the heads of the dragons in the waters. Thou breakest the heads of Leviathan in pieces. And by the way, again, because I'm not going to deal with this in a complete manner, the idea of the dragons and the Leviathan is the idea of the opponents of God. If you read through the Old Testament, also in the New Testament, the term dragon is often used for nations that were against God and his people. And so when you read that in Leviathan, it's just another way. of saying of angry beast-like rulers that would destroy God's people. It says, thou breakest the heads of Leviathan in pieces and gavest him to be meat to the people inhabiting the wilderness. Thou didst cleave the fountain and the flood. Thou driest up mighty rivers. The day is thine. The night also is thine. Thou hast prepared the light and the sun. Thou hast set all the borders of the earth. Thou hast made summer and winter. Remember this, that the enemy hath reproached, O Lord, and that the foolish people have blasphemed thy name. O deliver not the soul of thy turtle dove unto the multitude of the wicked. Forget not the congregation of thy poor forever. Have respect unto the covenant, for the dark places of the earth are full of the habitations of cruelty. O let not the oppressed return ashamed. Let the poor and needy praise thy name. Arise, O God, plead thine own cause. Remember how the foolish man reproacheth thee daily. Forget not the voice of thine enemies. The tumult of those that rise up against thee increaseth continually. I think that's safe to say, again, that most of us have been in a place where we just don't know where to turn in life. Where you go to for help, where do you get answers again? How do you address life when you don't know what to do? And in this particular psalm, there's a picture given about the condition of the nation of Israel as they go through the destruction of the city of Jerusalem. At least that's what this seems to appear to be speaking about there as far as the time period. Now, for those of you that might not know about the destruction of the city of Jerusalem, historically, there were three different occasions, at least three different occasions, when the nation was conquered. The first was when Nebuchadnezzar was led Babylon in 587 B.C., they came and destroyed the city. If you were to read the Old Testament prophets, you would find that event being talked about time and time and time again. It's brought up because of the condition of the people, and because of what God imposed upon them, and because of what God was going to do for them. Another time was between the Old and New Testament time periods. Some people call it the silent period. This was a time when Antiochus the Fourth, or Antiochus Epiphanes, was the Greek king of the Seleucid Empire. Now, you may not care about those little things, but why not give you something you don't know about it? And if you like it, wonderful. And if you don't, you'll throw it away anyhow. Now, he ruled from 175 B.C. until he died in 164 B.C. And about 167 B.C., he led his armies and they destroyed the city of Jerusalem. Once again, they overwhelmed it. And the temple, inside the temple, now he despised the Jewish religion. And inside the temple, on the altar, he sacrificed a pig. And that was known as the abomination of desolation by many people. Now, the last time that the city of Jerusalem was destroyed, actually, it was not recorded as in the Bible as far as it being something that had taken place. But what we see is it's prophesied about by Jesus. Again, if you were to read Matthew 24, you would read about his declarations of one stone not being left on top of the other when he looked at the temple. And that was fulfilled in 70 AD when Titus, the Roman general and prince, led his army to the siege and destruction of the city of Jerusalem. Now, again, if you're a historical kind of person, you like history, Josephus wrote the history of the wars that went around the nation of Israel and the history of the destruction of the city of Jerusalem under Titus. And if you would read it next to Matthew 24, you would begin seeing, and also other New Testament passages, you would see actual fulfillment of a lot of things that people think is yet to come. And those kinds of things are what it appears that the psalmist is expressing about, is telling us about it in this particular psalm. He's expressing the deep despair that the people of Israel felt and were feeling when their city had been destroyed by Nebuchadnezzar and the people were marched off into captivity. If you were to see the captivity or rather read about the captivity of the Jewish people under the Babylonian control, you would find that when the Babylonians came into the city, they literally killed thousands upon thousands. And by the way, for those of you that, again, like historical pieces, when Titus destroyed the city of Jerusalem, 1.1 million Jews died in a 1.5 year siege. 1.1 million Jews. The people in this particular psalm are, we hear their cries, their hurt, their pain, their question of where to turn to. By the way, if you want to hear again a little bit about how they were feeling, the 137th Psalm gives us the words of what they were crying to God when they were captives in Babylon. It says, by the rivers of Babylon, there we sat down, yea, we wept when we remembered Zion. We hanged our harps upon the willows in the midst thereof. For there they are that carried us away captive, required of us a song. And they wasted us, they that wasted us required of us mirth, saying, sing us one of the songs of Zion. And then they said, how shall we sing the Lord's song in a strange land? Do you hear the anguish that's there? The hurt, the pain, because the captors are demanding of them, sing those songs you used to sing. And they were songs about the wonders of God and the way God took care of them and the way God provided for them. And they could not sing that kind of song because their heart was broken. And they exclaimed, how? How can we sing that kind of song as a captive in a strange land? Well, I'm ask you a simple question here this evening. Where do you turn when everything that's familiar and everything that you depend upon in your life seems to have melted away? Where do you turn when you feel as if you have no hope and it seems that you've been abandoned by everything and everyone that you depended on in your life? Where do you turn when you can do nothing about your circumstances and it seems like everything is working against you? Where do you turn? I think the psalmist gives us some answers here. And if we look at this psalm with that background in mind, maybe we can see some things about where we should turn when life is a mess. The very first piece of this is a picture of when God turns away. When God turns away. Now remember, verse 1 he says, O God, why hast thou cast us off forever? Why does thy anger smoke against the sheep of thy pasture? And here is the basic question that must be asked of why. But I think it appears to me that the question is really not why God had cast them off. But they felt that God had cast them off forever. If they'd have read the prophet Jeremiah, they would have remembered that there was a 70-year period that they were going to be captive. Now, folks, if you were, let's say you were 10 years old, or let's say you're 20 years old, you got placed into captivity by people that hated you and wanted to destroy you and cause you hurt and pain and difficulty, would 70 years seem like forever to you? I mean, let's face it. I don't know what the average age expectancy was back in those days, but I know in the United States, in the early 1800s, about 1810, I think it was, the life expectancy of a man living in, I believe it was South Carolina, again, if I remember correctly, was 38 years old. Now, how many guys in here are under 38 years old? Would you raise your hand? Now, raise it up high. Everybody else look around. Let's say, one, two. Now, Kyle, you can't raise your hand. No. Okay. Every one of you would already be dead. That's over 38, or at least the majority of you. And I don't know what the life expectancy was, but if you were a man or a woman that was captive and you'd been there 10 years or 20 years or 30 years, maybe you were just a child when you were taken there, and here you are after 50 years, you've raised your kids, and you're still captive, you would say, why am I going to be here forever? Why will I be here forever? And I think that when they're going through that issue, they believe that God is, it's not so much that God has cast them off, but they feel like he's cast them off forever. Nowhere to turn now. Nowhere to turn. They're slaves. What you do as a slave when your slave owners are the most powerful people on earth? When you're at the place of not knowing where to turn, it's not unusual for a person to forget that hope has been provided if they'd simply look for it. It's hard to look sometimes. But you'll notice that the psalmist speaks about what has happened to Jerusalem, and he points out to God what the enemy had done to the temple and to the nation. Now he's reminding God here. God, you know what they did? Look at him. They burned your temple up. One time in our history, and by the way, if you read this, you can get this presentation of this thought. He's saying, one time we used to think a man was great if he could take an axe and chop down trees, but now they came in and chopped down everything that we ever built in the temple. All the beautiful building of the temple, all those marvelous things inside of it. God, I want to tell you, God, what they did. I want you to see what they did, God. They've done all these wicked things in the sanctuary. They set up their own symbols of their gods. They destroyed the beautiful structure. They caused the people to leave their places of worship. It's as if there's no longer any prophet of God around to tell them what's going to happen. And they're wondering why God has left them forever. This description is a description of what happens to a people or an individual when God withdraws his hand. Now I know, a lot of people are going to start saying, now wait a minute, didn't God say he'd never leave us nor forsake us? Yep, he sure did. But my friend, as soon as you turn away from God, his hand is withdrawn to give you the freedom of the will to make your decision on whether you would serve God or not. Let me give you a for instance, okay? Some of you young people, you'll be making decisions probably within 5. Some of you younger ones, hopefully not. But within another 5 years or so, you might make a decision on who to marry. Yeah. And you're going to see some guy or gal come along, and you're going to think they're the most beautiful, wonderful thing there is. I mean, they smile at the right things. They laugh at your jokes, guys. My kids tell me that nobody should laugh at my jokes. And I tell my kids, if I can't laugh at them, I wouldn't tell them, and so I like them, and I don't care if you do or anybody else does. But the girlfriend laugh at your jokes. They look wonderful and marvelous, and you love Jesus, but they're so good looking. And you don't want to be alone going to high school without a boyfriend or girlfriend. You don't want to be one of those. Mm-mm. Nope, nope. You want some guy or gal hanging around you. And you don't bother to question or search to see whether they love Jesus or not. Not whether they come to the church building with you or not. You understand there's a big difference to that. There's a big difference. I've seen a lot of guys go to church with gals after they got married, about a year after they got married. Man, they're nowhere to be seen. And let me tell you what usually happens. Now, this is not a good thing, but this is usually what happens. The gal or the guy will come in my office and they'll say, they're so horrible. They weren't like that before we got married. Yeah, they were. You just didn't pay attention to God. See, you allowed them to fool you and trick you instead of looking at whether they were the people that God would have them to be. Were they looking at the Word of God for their life? Were they praying? Were they witnessing? Were they showing fruit of being Christian? You see, you look at that. And you wind up in a position that's horrible and difficult. And you're saying to God, why did you leave me forever? Because you see, let me tell you, you think it's lonely being alone? You ought to be lonely with somebody that really doesn't love Jesus. And treats you like they don't love you. That's lonely. See, now, it's easy for me to say, well, you know, it's all your fault. You closed your eyes to God. You didn't pay attention to the warning signs. You didn't look to the Word of God. And folks, by the way, most of us have made some kind of decision that God hasn't been pleased with in our lives. And some of us have been in situations where we're saying, where's God at? And they had turned their back upon God. They closed their eyes to who God was and what He wanted. Read the Old Testament account about Israel before the destruction of Jerusalem. Read about all the kings they had, about the nation of Israel, which was basically half of the nation. And you'll see how that nation never had a godly king. Never had a single godly king, Israel. Now Judah, the other half, they had some godly kings, but they also had some doozies. And the people worshipped other gods. And they treated God as if He were nothing. And then destruction came. They'd been warned. They'd been warned. The prophets had proclaimed it. They had told them. And they paid no attention. Israel was in that situation because they closed their eyes to God and refused to see what they were and what they were doing. And so there they are, saying, why have you forsaken us forever? It seems to me that God could have said, are you kidding me? You left me. You left me. But that's their heart. That's how they felt. That's what they saw. That's how it looked to them. And sometimes when people begin to grasp that reality, that it appears as if God is not with them any longer, they just don't know where to turn. Let me give you some hope. In verses 12 through 17, I think we see when God acts for His people. You see, it's at this juncture in verse 12 that we read about the outlook that changes in the people. listen to how it says, what it says. For God is my king of old, working salvation in the midst of the earth. It's almost like the author is remembering who God is. He's the one, see, he's getting the idea. He's getting it back into his heart and his mind, and he's expressing it to people. God is the one who's eternal. He's the eternal one. He's the king of old. He's the king of eternity. He create, now remember what you read as you went down through those verses. He created the earth and everything in it. He set the light into place. Remember what the book of Genesis says. He set the moon and the sun so that there'd be a dividing of day and night. There's light, a lesser light at night and a greater light in the morning. And we have this picture of God's creative power. And the psalmist refers them back to that. God divided the sea. He set the boundaries. The sea goes no further than what he says it can go. It goes no further than what he says it can go. He owns the day, the night. He made all the seasons. He is God of old. He is the eternal one. And God can take the evil things in this world and use them for his good and for the good of his people. Now let me tell you, the Nebuchadnezzars, the Antiochuses, and the Tituses of this world think they are conquering through their power and their abilities or through their false gods, and they do not even know that God is using them to help his people to overcome the temptations and the evils of life, to turn them back into the place they should be. Friend, many times in your life, there have been things that have happened, and you're saying, oh God, where are you at? And it has produced exactly in your life what you have needed. It's caused you to awaken to who God is and what God is like. It's caused you to see that you have been where you should not be, and you have lived as you should not have lived, and the wonders of God using those things and using those people who think that they're capable and they're mighty and they're powerful, and they don't even know that it's the God of eternity that's using them to help you and me. There's the picture that is given here to us so that we can grasp the wonders of who God is. When we're at the place of not knowing where to turn, know this. God is our King from eternity, and he works his salvation in the midst of the earth. No matter what's happened in your life, what brought you to Jesus? What brought you to Jesus? Was it the good or the bad that was taking place? Was it the sudden realization? Some people come many different ways, but some of you had horrible things taking place in your life, and suddenly, somehow, some way, you saw the wonders of God in that and saw that he was there. Is that not a New Testament principle? For God worketh good in our lives with all the things around us. He takes the bad and he produces good out of it for us. Now, he didn't say that all things that were bad were wonderful. But he tells us that even the bad things he takes and uses in your life for his good. What a marvelous God we have. When we're at that place of questioning and wondering, God is there. Now, you do not see it all the time. You do not grasp it all the time. You may wonder why it takes so long, and you want God to do something right now, but the reality is that he is doing something right now. You might not understand what he's doing. You might not see what he's doing. These people have been in captivity 70 years. And about year 52, somebody no doubt was saying, man, God's got to do something about this. When's he going to do something? And they were wondering. But God was doing something. He was making arrangements in history. He was changing events. He was moving people into place so that one day when this king by the name of Cyrus became the king of of the Babylonian kingdom. Later, during that time, it was called the Mede-Persian kingdom. But when Cyrus became the king, and he looked at all of those peoples, and he said that they could go back to their homelands and go ahead and start over again and be free. They did not get that. Even though if they had listened to the prophet, they would have known that the prophet had proclaimed it. But there they sat, saying, where's God at? Where's God at? Well, God in some city over in the Mede-Persian Empire, he had brought up this boy by the name of Cyrus and made him king. And this leader, this powerful king, looked at and he said, well, he did it for everybody that were captives in his kingdom. Yeah. So God is just good to more than his people. But it revolved around his people. He cared for them. By the way, we should understand that from a New Testament truth that's given to us. In Galatians, when the fullness of time was come, you've heard me say this many times, when the fullness of time was come, God sent forth his son, made of a woman, made under the law, to redeem them that were under the law, that we might receive the adoption of sons. In the fullness of time, and that means at the exact moment. At the exact moment. For those of you that don't know what that exact moment was, just let me give you a quick picture of it historically. Historically, Rome was the ruling power of the Mediterranean world, the world of that day. Rome had enacted their peace upon the earth, the Pax Roma. And again, I've told you this, and what it means is if you didn't like their peace, they killed you. And then they had peace. And so the Roman peace was in effect. The Roman roads were built. Some of them are still in existence today. Today. Over 2,000 years later, roads that the Romans laid out through the world of that day are still in existence. And before that, there was a fella that ran around. His name was called Alexander the Great. He conquered the known world of his day, and he left them one thing that was more important than anything else for the fullness of time when Jesus was going to come. And that was a common language of the Greek language, kind of like the English of today. You go anywhere in the world. I've been to Haiti. Haitians spoke English. I was riding down the road with a Haitian fella, young man, and he could speak English almost as well as I could, which is not saying a whole lot sometimes. But he spoke English. I was in Nicaragua, and there were guys there that could speak English. I was in Ecuador, and there were guys there that spoke English. English is the world language, so to speak. Well, that's what Greek was. And so when Jesus came in the fullness of time, the gospel message could be taken to the entirety of the world in relative peace. They had travel arrangements made or capabilities given because they had roads that they could go on to various parts of the world of that day. Now, they may not have been I-75, but they were the roads of that day. And they could go places and talk to virtually anybody by using the Greek language. In the fullness of time, God sent forth his son, made of a woman, made under the law, to redeem them that were under the law, that we might receive the adoption of sons. There's the picture of God doing what he wants to do. And when God acts for his people, things take place that cannot take place. When God acts for his people, things happen that cannot happen. When God acts for his people, circumstances are changed that cannot be changed. He is our God from eternity to eternity. Lastly, I'd point out when God's people call on him, listen to the psalmist once again as he calls on God for help. Remember this, that the enemy have reproached, O Lord, and that the foolish people have blasphemed thy name. O deliver not the soul of thy turtle dove. By the way, this is a term of endearment. You see it used in the book of Solomon, where the church is called a dove. In Solomon 6 and 9, it says, my dove, my undefiled, is but one. And so this idea of this turtle dove talks about the endearment of God for his people. It says that the foolish people have blasphemed thy name. O deliver not the soul of thy turtle dove unto the multitude of the wicked. Forget not the congregation of thy poor forever. Have respect unto the covenant, for the dark places of the earth are full of the habitations of cruelty. Oh, let not the oppressed return ashamed. Let the poor and needy praise thy name. Arise, O God, plead thine own cause. Remember how the foolish man reproacheth thee daily. Forget not the voice of thine enemies, the tumult of those that rise up against the increased that thee increaseth continually. Here's the cry. They're saying to God, give us help. You love us. You care about us. We're your turtle dove. We don't use that kind of language, do we? But we would say something to your spouse, hopefully. Like, you know, I love you more than anybody else in the world. I tell Ruth she's my favorite wife in the whole world. I mean it with all my heart. She's my favorite wife. And all you wives, she's my favorite wife. Yeah. And I love her more than any of the rest of you. And that's just the way it goes. And we use different terms of endearment. Here's God speaking to his people. Or rather, the psalmist saying to God, don't forget your turtle dove. Don't forget your sweetheart. Don't forget the one you love. Don't forget the one that is yours and will always be yours. Don't forget me. Don't forget me. I do strange things to Ruth. I say things to her. I say, Ruth, have I told you today that I love you? And now those of you that have been around a while, do you remember the song? Anybody? Have I told you to? I'm not going to try to sing it, okay? That's what I do to Ruth. Have I told you? And she says, say, well, do you? And I say, yeah, I do. Yeah. And I'll say, you look beautiful today and go through all those things with her. And she's gotten used to it after a while. And you know, I've only done it for 43 years. And so she's heard this, maybe not every day, but there's been very few days that go by that we're together that I don't say that to her. My friend, don't you think that God has that kind of feeling towards you? And the psalmist says, remember your turtle dove. Now, he points out two things that I'd refer to. And that first is that God's people remind God of those who are against him. And they remind God of the fact that they are for him. Friend, you just need to let God know whose side you're on. When you do not know where to turn, turn to God. The Old Testament prophet Zechariah said, therefore say thou unto them, thus saith the Lord of hosts, turn ye unto me, saith the Lord of hosts, and I will turn unto you, saith the Lord of hosts. When God's people call on him, he will hear and he will help. If you're at the place of not knowing where to turn, then turn to God. If you do not know what to do, then turn to God. He will remember his people. I pray that you and I remember that when we reach the place where we do not know where to turn. Father, Thank you tonight. Thank you for these people that sit here in this room. I pray that your very word will impact their hearts and their lives in a powerful way, that they will hear you and know that you are there with them. When it looks like nothing works, when they don't know where else to turn, may they understand that you are the eternal God and that we are your turtle dove. God, help us just to remind you that we're on your side and we're glad that we are. In Jesus' name, amen. Would you stand?